Now let us continue with the second part of this important tabulation. And we're going to take up Libra. Esoteric Astrology Adventure 98C. We're beginning on page 333. The color assigned to Libra is indigo. Indigo is the color of the second ray. This, too, suggests the second ray nature, ultimate second ray nature of Venus. And the second ray coming through this sign itself. Well, for the undeveloped man, unbalanced fiery passion. The sacral center is deeply involved here. All the centers below the diaphragm. But especially the merging of the opposites in a very human sense and human love under a lower appropriation of the Venus energy is what is to be found. We remember the rulers are Venus, Uranus, and Saturn. So certainly, well, Mars rules this entire phase, of course. Whenever we're talking about the undeveloped man, it's a Martian phase, because all the elementals of the personality, including the personality elemental, are ruled by Mars and also by the Moon. So that's generic. That applies no matter what. The unbalanced fiery passion as Mars rules sex is powerful here, but of course, if there weren't that magnetic affiliative drawing together in the world of form under Venus, we wouldn't have this unbalanced fiery passion. And notice it is unbalanced, whereas Libra is the sign of balance. We have that which is intended to be achieved, and we also have beginning conditions. So we cannot say that the highest descriptors apply throughout the history of the sign. In the beginning, there is imbalance in Libra. And in Scorpio, although you have a great selflessness at the end, there's a lot of selfishness in the beginning. And in Taurus, although there's great light at the end, you have lots of darkness in the beginning. Now, moving on and out of the irrational phase of emotion instinct, we come to the advanced man who weighs the opposites, because after all, Libra is a mental sign. And that sense of balance and of weighing and of evaluation is still a Venusian quality. So it's not that we're rid of the first ruler here, but it's used in a more intelligent manner, because Venus is, after all, the intellect. We have been told in when we've been looking at the seven rulers of the cardinal cross, Venus, intellect. Interesting, however, that qualities of the sixth ray are here suggested, devotion and aspiration. And maybe when we do have the presence of Venus, we have these qualities. Venus is fundamentally a sixth ray planet in a monadic sense. We wouldn't know that, I think, except for what the Tibetans told us in a treatise on cosmic fire, the home of the planetary logos of the sixth ray. And whenever we see the word home, we have to suspect that the monad is being discussed, the monad of the planet. So the pairs of opposites, we are evaluating soul and personality. Something higher, at least intellect, is coming in. Rationality versus irrationality. Many of the opposites come in, as we saw when we discussed the Libra chapter. Pairs of opposites are somewhat vertical, and we've been told that this is a light which oscillates and moves to rest, but the oscillation occurs on the vertical axis. So what does the soul want? What does the personality want? What are the just claims of each soul and personality? And eventually, in the fifth petal experience, as aspiration takes over, we find devotion and aspiration, and probably devotion and aspiration, devotion to and aspiration towards the higher of the pairs of opposites, with the lower of these opposites getting less and less attention. This is the process of tipping the scales. It is assisted by Uranus, which is one of the rulers here. Uranus controlling the reversal of the wheel. When there is a reorientation because of a decision, may not be made mentally entirely, but because of a decision to follow a gravitation towards the higher of the sensed pairs of opposites. So we should note those descriptors which seem to us perhaps not so familiar. For instance, in Libra, devotion and aspiration, well, maybe devotion to the loved one, even if on the human stage, but aspiration towards the higher pairs of opposites. Now, this comes in partially under Venus. And, well, to what extent under Uranus, it's difficult to say. Uranus supplies in Libra a more authentic sense of values and makes one, in relationship, an authentic being. There is in the Sabian symbols the very first degree symbolized by perfectly preserved butterflies through which a pin has been put. Not such a pleasant symbol in some ways, but representing in the mind of Dane Rudyard the archetypes, the perfect archetypes, which we must learn to express. And Uranus has to do with the archetypes. Let's just say there is a cosmic pull with Uranus, and it pulls us ever more towards higher energy states, higher realms. And in that sense, it is because of the archetypal vision, it presents the source of aspiration. When there is vision of these higher geometries, these higher beautiful arrangements, which converge upon the most beautiful of all, the archetype, then aspiration is stimulated. So in that sense, Uranus could enter. It pulls towards the soul. It pulls away from burial in of consciousness in matter. It liberates consciousness. So this weighing of the opposites leads to the liberation of consciousness coming under Uranus. But Uranus also is going to apply, even though it's the esoteric ruler, to the disciple initiate phase, definitely, and so will Saturn. Now, the balance attained has to do with Saturn, who is really the Lord of Balance and the highest ruler, and also the exalted ruler, if we can call it ruler, the planet exalted in Libra. And there is the proper stance within soul on the noble middle path, balance between the pairs of opposites. One can truly live as a soul because Saturn gives everything its just proportion, rules the fulcrum. There are many things we can say about Libra, but here we are emphasizing more the psychological side, and in this soul consciousness, divine love is achieved and expressed. And, I would say, loving understanding is expressed. Although perfect understanding is often associated with the third ray, which Libra expresses, that the soul realize the one in many, and let the word go forth in perfect understanding. So there are triadal virtues here, which are coming in, soul virtues, triadal virtues, and, of course, in the life of the initiate, moving more and more towards triadal virtues, which are more impersonal, divine love of Buddhi, understanding of the higher mind, the spiritual will under Saturn is activated here. And the center of balance is ever moving upward, as I described before. So eventually it will take its place within the Buddhi of the triad, where we also will have divine love and definite understanding. Libra, showing its magnetic power, relates the two in Gemini. In Gemini, the two see each other, they recognize each other, but are they magnetically related? That is the question. They are oscillatory, now one, now the other. They don't get too close in Gemini. We've noticed this about Gemini, that love of freedom and mobility and not to be held. And Gemini people may feel that as well, at least not to be held by one. Both Gemini and Sagittarius in the third position, we might say, have their, and thus identify with the activity aspect, have their relation to the third aspect. So the two know they are to be related, but the magnetic Venusian energy of Libra, through which the second ray, I think, does pour on some level, will relate the two, bring them closer and closer together until the two become the one. The merging factor exists in Libra, and there the two really do become the one. Unbalanced, fiery passion of the sacral center, which Libra rules to a certain extent, and to which Venus can be related, and certainly Mars can be related. The human merging, the human love, and all of the glamours that go along with that, and that for a long time, and driving human relations for many millions of years, this fiery sexual urge, the very first of the hydra heads, which needs to be overcome. Then, in the second tier of petals for the advanced man, in the hall of learning, recognizing these opposites and trying to see what role they should play, with more and more emphasis upon the higher of the opposites and devotion to an aspiration, devotion to the soul and aspiration towards this higher of the pairs of opposites, though the final decision has not been made. We might call it the forced decision, later to be made in Scorpio. And then balance. The triangle is the symbol of balance, and the spiritual triad is also symbolized by the triangle. So I think for the disciple, and especially for the initiate, of triadal life here in Libra. Libra rules the Acmic plane and the spiritual triad in general, the triple flowers. It rules that hierarchy which is, in a way, above the human and related to the solar angelic hierarchy, which is the fifth. Divine love is attained, then if it's divine, it has to be at least triadal, in fact, monadic. But let's just say that the Buddha plane is capable of divine love, and it can bring that love into what we normally call the soul. A great perspectivized understanding can be achieved in the spiritual triad. And the true balance of the triad can be attained, especially for the initiate. And this requires the Lord of Balance, Saturn, the hierarchical planet, to be active, and also the planet of Exalted in Libra. So you can see it's really very deep and somewhat subtle, with many overlapping threefold configurations. The sign Libra is not well understood, the Tibetan says, and it's sometimes called the master of no man's land. And there's a certain vagueness about it. Well, we might expect so. It is one of the arms of the cardinal cross. It controls the factor we call legislation, which is the making of laws, or, well, God made the laws, the planetary logos, or the solar logos did, and they are being adapted by the planetary logos, who probably makes his own laws with respect to his own system. And those laws must be followed, which they are, when the spiritual will is recognized and followed or aligned with. So Libra is all about laying down the law, presenting the laws to the lower nature. As far as the enforcement of the law, we might have a bit more of that going on in another Venusian Saturnian sign, Capricorn. But the higher law, as understood within the spiritual triad, and as part of the planetary plan, because the law exists in order to make sure that the plan can be achieved, the law is a guarantor that purpose will be achieved, and the divine plan, in all of its intelligence and its atmic connectivity, is used to bring through that purpose. So we have these factors, spiritual, will, law, the divine plan, the archetypal purpose, all of these can find connectivity in relation to the Libran energy. It has quite a range of application, all the way from the animalistic nature of love, which we call euphemistically sometimes human love, but it's really strongly motivated by the animal nature. And one loses one's center in following that type of love, and thereby becomes unbalanced, to the more intelligent weighing of the pairs of opposites using the Ajna center, which symbolically seems to have Libra as a representative, also the throat center and its third ray, so the weighing of the opposites through intelligence. And finally, a balance between heart and mind, between the second ray and the third ray. And everything is directed from the head as a balancing center, including all of the different superior chakras in a state of balance. Under the Libran influence, the two that we recognize ourselves to be are brought into close, ever closer relationship, into a love relationship, love between the opposites. And Libra provides this particularly. The implications of what the Tibetan has given, the hidden implications, can be somewhat drawn forth, and we can find that second ray in Libra, I do believe. Then we move on to Scorpio, the sign most identified with humanity, as humanity eventually, as the fourth grade of hierarchy, is to have its field of expression as the Buddhic plane, once the fourth initiation has been reached by the majority of humanity. Then indeed, the destiny of humanity will be much better understood as a planetary harmonizer, and an effective one, too. Well, we have some dramatic terms here in the crimson red of Scorpio. Not the scarlet red of Aries, but the crimson, which I've tried to portray over here. So, for the undeveloped man, unity of selfishness, impenetrable. The monster, or the one who is out of balance with all intentions of the plan and wants to devour everything for itself, for its own satisfaction, not only ill-proportioned and frightening and causing repulsion between the various factors of creation, but one who, like a black hole, takes everything into itself. That movie Dracula, the dramatization in film of the Bram Stoker novel, showed Dracula moving through a garden and all the flowers wilted and turned black as he passed, because he drew all the energy into himself to support his unholy purposes, unholy, unrelated to the whole. And when we, you know, corner the market, so to speak, and take everything for ourselves, when the part demands the prerogatives of the whole, we have a monstrous, imbalanced situation, which flies in the face of beauty. So we can have some really ugly things occurring in relation to Scorpio, and usually monsters are pretty ugly and repellent. That's the lower part of the fourth ray ruling Scorpio, that which causes division and conflict. And the higher part produces harmony, and we'll see that as we move along here. So this is the unified dweller on the threshold, and the man does not even notice that he is that dweller. That is his self. In Scorpio, the first thing we have is the serpent, and then the serpent handler. And then we have Hercules, who triumphs in the final decanate. So this goes on for a long time, and the human being is a pretty unpleasant specimen, though gradually developing the higher qualities, still the very, very selfish, devouring aspects of its nature are found here. We're told that nature is red in tooth and claw. What color red? The color of Scorpio, where everything is devouring everything else? There's a lot of the destructive first ray in this sign, not just that it's ruled by Pluto, but that the sign itself seems to suggest the first ray. And since Scorpio is one of the cosmic decanates, and the first ray hero Hercules is associated with this cosmic decanate, we have to infer that in addition to the present fourth ray, there is much of the first. But eventually, the man becomes the advanced man, and conflict with duality supervenes. Well, in the petals of the egoic lotus, petal 4, 5, and 6, the higher part of dualistic man has been sensed and is coming greater, more greatly into focus all the time. So now, the man is poised between the pairs of opposites. He's not trying to balance them. He's trying for a victory. The victory of the higher over the lower. That's why the balance of Libra is disturbed. This temporary balance between the third aspect and the second aspect is not allowed to prevail, as it would be with Libra, you know, always trying to give just deserts to even the lower. And that is a constructive attitude because it allows for the slow and steady evolution of form without undue premature destruction. But one of the pans of the scales has fallen. There is a decision to move forward into soul domination, and hence the conflict, and the man becomes the fighter poised between the pairs of opposites. Now, Mars is the first ruler, but Mars is also the second ruler of Scorpio, and Pluto is accompanying. Pluto can be monstrous in its early death-dealing tendencies. And Mars can represent bloody opposition and the spirit of conflict and opposition in all circumstances, the monster. But later, these same powers can be used by the fighter to put the lower to death through Mars and Pluto. It never entirely succeeds because the man is still a victim of a partially benighted consciousness. So the fight with duality may have some temporary victories, but the illusion is not seen for what it is. And under Mercury, for the disciple and especially for the initiate, the illusion is seen for what it is, and the lower is defeated, the Hydra is defeated, because its energy is taken away. The very sight of it as illusion and the experience of the higher Buddhic energy takes away the energy that was given to the illusory nature of man. So a reverse type of vampirism occurs, whereas life, vital life, was stolen from beautiful forms by the monster. There's a reverse vampirism here, spiritual vampirism. The lower monstrous forms, the selfish forms, are devitalized. They can no longer be sustained by vitality. And the energy is lifted up into the higher aspects of man, where it belongs. And from that level, lower and more appropriate forms can be vitalized. A higher unity is here achieved. There is the conquest of the Hydra and the unification of soul and personality. We saw that in Virgo, another one of those triple signs, an M sign, there was a fusion of soul and personality, and this fusion is brought to even a higher state in Scorpio. There's no resistance anymore at the third degree. The ancient domination of the personality is ended, and Scorpio is still active at the third degree, along with Capricorn. Capricorn's active at 5 initiations, and Scorpio at 3. So, even though this is about the disciple and the initiate, the epitome here is the word the disciple. Well, every initiate is a disciple as well. But we might often say, or we might say, the triumphant disciple. The one who has conquered sin, vice, the lower traps, the things that trap and bury and compromise consciousness and devitalize soul life. All these things are conquered. We still continue to relate Leo and Scorpio, whereas Scorpio staged Leo, what did it say that it visions release in Leo? Seeks release in Leo. Well, now it happens. Scorpio stages the release of Leo. It gives us those testing circumstances in which the lower ego will be put in the second place if there is to be a triumph of spiritual values. So poor Leo, in the lower aspects of its expression, is subdued. And finally, a higher type of Leo, I am that, a type of Leo with which Scorpio can live, emerges. The I am that consciousness prevails for a while, but even that has to be put to death, and a greater consciousness of the one has to take its place. I am that I am. Or I am that, and that am I. And Scorpio may be involved in staging the destructive circumstances which give release into the highest of the selves, the one self. So Mars, and Mercury, the higher unity between soul and personality is achieved, and also aspects of the spirit are brought into this at the third degree, a triple unity, as we have discussed earlier in relation to Virgo and also to Scorpio. And we have the initiated disciple here who can access the intuition or the transcendental mind ruled by Mercury. And then there's no need to identify with the Hydra. It all looks very unappealing, uninteresting, unmagnetic. Its power is gone. Its magical, hypnotic allure is gone. No need to fight anymore between these in one's own nature. But one can fight the world illusion without identifying with it. One still can remain the fighter in a larger sense. Every disciple does battle, but once he's conquered illusion within his own nature, he sets out to conquer illusion within the world and thereby becomes a liberator, a server, a kind of savior of the world. He's not captivated by it, he simply battles it. But he battles with light. He battles with intuition, with clear thought. Yes, he can use the will, he can use his power to oppose, but the hierarchical nature of Mercury must support him. The mind is strong in Scorpio in two senses. It overcomes the emotional tendency, and finally it overcomes illusion. So, a sign of triple unification, Scorpio, in which the initiated disciple emerges and is saved from lower egotism or egoism, and is saved even from ahamkaric life of an expanded kind in the causal body by being released into the oneself through the death-dealing powers of Scorpio. It's not testing anymore in the usual way, but it is contributing to the expansion of selfhood into the One. Now, we come to Sagittarius. Let's see, let's take a look at some of the geometry in all of these, the angles, because they will mean something. It's a trine. We discussed the square here between Aries and Capricorn, the quincunx between Taurus and Sagittarius, the trine between Gemini and Libra, the semi-sextile between Cancer and Leo. They are signs which need each other. They are quite different, but form a sextile unit together. They are adjacent and are two halves of one whole. Virgo and Aquarius, another quincunx of 150 degrees. Leo and Scorpio, another square. When we find the squares, I think we really have a battle. Because it is the most disruptive aspect, in a sense. One where you have real collisions of quality. So Virgo irradiates the world in Aquarius. That's a quincunx. Forward-looking quincunx rather than the backward quincunx of Taurus to Sagittarius. And then another trine in Libra and another square in Scorpio. The places where squares have appeared is Aries, Capricorn, Leo, Scorpio, Scorpio, Leo. And now we're going to have another square, Sagittarius and Pisces. Sometimes two signs stay together. Libra and Leo, Scorpio, Scorpio, Leo. These two signs have been together in both demonstrations. Gemini, Libra, Libra, Gemini, the two signs in both instances. But not Aries, Capricorn, no. When Capricorn is repeated, Aries is not there. And not Taurus, Sagittarius, because when Sagittarius is repeated, Taurus is not there. And all of this is telling of important subjective relationships between the signs, which are not those which are obvious. I don't think we fully fathom all of these connections, but we can come closer. The Sagittarian person is always aiming at something, has his eye on the target, even if it's an erroneous target. He's self-centered, however, so his eye is very much upon himself at first, and he'll try anything. Taking a risk, experimenting, taking the risk to try this and that, all in the interest of the gratification of the self. So this is the adventurous sign, and often gets into plenty of trouble that more provident types might have foreseen. There can be a lack of foresight in the early Sagittarian, which, you know, we oftentimes think of it as the sign of foresight. It can see far ahead and understand the distant goal and perhaps how to get there, but maybe not in the beginning. There are a lot of futile searches occurring in the beginning, and much movement towards the satisfaction of desire. Jupiter represents the satisfaction of desire. It's a high sacred planet, but not as it operates in early Sagittarius, because their great gratification is sought by whatever means, and many risks and experiments are taken to achieve fulfillment. But it's the fulfillment of the form as the form prompts under Mars. The hierarchical ruler here is Mars, but it has a lot to do with the life of the lunar lords who are doing the prompting. So the Sagittarius is prompted, and he heads off in various directions of imagined satisfaction, all to fulfill his self-centered life. In a certain sense, in the undeveloped phase, the eyes are always on the self, but here the target becomes the self and its own satisfaction. So the Sagittarius individual is in a way multi-pointed in the beginning. He shoots many arrows in different directions. As a centaur, he charges off for satisfaction in many directions. And even as one who sits astride the horse of personality, he may move in many directions which are later proved to be errant directions. But as an advanced man, millions of years later, he draws the many into the one. There's the association with the third aspect of divinity. It is the third aspect fire sign. He draws the many into the one and achieves one-pointedness. The many goals become the one goal, and he directs his approach. This is quite similar, isn't it, to the directed personality effort of Aries. And indeed, they both are strongly influenced by Mars, which at its best gives directed effort. Notice the color here. It's said to be rich blue, not deep blue, as in Taurus, but rich blue. These are symbolic descriptors, and probably there will be an exact fifth ray formula for the meaning of these colors as described. Crimson, scarlet, deep blue, rich blue, all of it will be mathematically determined one day, but right now we have to approach through general points. And if we try to achieve a premature specificity without seeing the larger whole, we're going to fail. So, do the planets themselves that rule this sign correlate with what is said here in the three stages? Maybe yes, maybe no. Jupiter does give conceit and the sense of self-importance, which could contribute to the self-centeredness of Sagittarius, and the fourth ray is coming through this sign, and it is a ray of self-centeredness. Let's just say the fifth ray is quite objective, and the person can become lost in the examination of the object, and the sixth ray is quite other-centered. But the fourth ray is self-centered, and the fourth ray types at first are often focused on their own troubled life. But Earth is the esoteric ruler here, And does it necessarily give one-pointedness and the directed approach? Not necessarily. Mars seems to be pervasive throughout Sagittarius, even though it's the hierarchical ruler. Mars will give one-pointedness and directed approach. For the advanced man, always thinking ahead, I knew or know those who are into what we might call life planning and goal planning and all of that. It helps to have some Capricorn there, but Sagittarius gives the vision of what the plan may work for or towards. And the one-pointed approach towards that vision is adopted in Sagittarius. And whereas in the beginning, Sagittarius is so, in a way, deflectible. Go here, go there, you know, always with intent. But since the goals are false, the mind can change, or rather the desire can change, and one goes towards another objective. Not one really valuable objective. But later, with a higher sense of values produced by the growth of mind and the intuition of a higher power, there can be one-pointed aspiration towards this sensed higher level or towards an ever-elevating goal. But finally, for the stage of disciple and initiate, the Sagittarian person, like the general in the army, becomes the director of men, not just the soldier, running where he's told to go, but one who sees a much broader picture. You would almost say that Jupiter should be required for this phase, and yet, strangely, it's the non-sacred planet, which is the hierarchical ruler, and the very sacred planet, which is the orthodox ruler. He is the controller now of the gate to wider life, the gate to initiation. And he seems to determine who can make application, who can enter through that gate. The factor of control can suggest some Mars, of course, and there is some leadership power in Mars, but the vision part, that requires Jupiter. So in a way, we see the influence of these rulers distributed across these three categories. We're now in the Hall of Wisdom. We've experienced a lot. Therefore, we can direct others who need to experience what we have experienced. And the factor of control, of one-pointed control, of, in a way, testing those who show up at the gate as to their idealism and as to their understanding of ideas, testing their motives, their real reasons for wanting to go through the gate, and not allowing through the gate those whose motives are not high enough. Sagittarius, in this sense, controls the higher life. So, the direction of Sagittarius leads to another one of the signs on the mutable cross. Sagittarius is the one-pointed disciple in Jupiter, who has to become the true savior in Pisces. And there is enough sixth ray in Sagittarius and enough sixth ray in Pisces to provide that link. Sagittarius at first is quite a follower, but later becomes the leader. If he's going to be the director of men and the controller of the gate, he is a leader. And we may remember the sixth ray law of repulse, where the follower does become the leader. He's asked by the groping disciple, lead me and others to the light. He's forced to become the leader. And later, He envisions the mountain blue. In the far distance stood a mountain blue, and from its summit issued forth a voice which said, "Come forward to the mountain top, and on its summit learn the invocation of a savior." So the follower, now a leader, orients himself towards the mountain top, whereupon he learns the invocation of a savior, and that is the final stage in Pisces. So the hall of ignorance and all of its self-centeredness and its rather chaotic, risky approaches, which teach the lessons and narrow the field so that those approaches, the approaches which don't work, are no longer used. Then further, the hall of learning, where one benefits from experience and directs oneself towards higher values. And then the hall of wisdom. The earth is found there as the esoteric ruler. And this is teaching men the true path, directing them along the path on earth, which will fulfill them and help to make the earth a sacred planet, which will bring about the sacred earth. There must be achievement on the plains of earth, and people must be rightly directed along that path. Also, there is the entire regeneration of the earthy nature, and in a sense, the upliftment of the earth towards sacredness, and the upliftment of microcosmic earth, our own energy system, especially our lower energy system, towards sacredness. So Sagittarius is an uplifting sign, reconditioning our earthly aspect and making it more fit to align with and receive energies from the higher sources indicated by Jupiter. All the exercise and the training and the conditioning that goes on in Sagittarius is for the purpose of uplifting the earthly factor of man and directing it towards higher objectives. It moves towards a lighter stage and is more athletic, you would say. Spiritual athletics coming in under Sagittarius, the type of training which will allow the vehicles really to be soul responsive. Now I think we can go on and do another one, at least begin it. Capricorn. Well, it doesn't say much, but what it says is surely indicative. Capricorn, the earthbound soul. I wrote a song called The Earthbound Soul. It's in the Capricorn ritual. Capricorn is an earth sign of great density. The diamond figure, you know, is correlated with Capricorn, but the bottom of it is deeply entrenched in the earth, and the upper part of that diamond becomes ethereal and can anchor itself within the monad. So all the way from the greatest density to the monad, we find Capricorn operative. Saturn is operative here on the lower levels, also on the esoteric levels, and finally Venus. Saturn is the planet which rules all that is lowest, and it correlates with the moon in doing so. Saturn, Mars, and the moon contribute to conditioning density. Really, Saturn, Mars, and the Earth representing a great third-ray entity, and the third ray is correlated with the lowest aspect of matter, and inherited from the previous solar system in which the third ray was accented. You kind of wonder whether in the previous solar system it being the fourth in a series of six or seven, whether the fourth ray would not be somewhat emphasized, learning the integration of the personality, we might say, at least the selfish integration of the personality nature. So the eyes are facing downward. Even the nose of the Capricorn type often faces downward in at least the first decanate, and maybe the third. So the starry heavens are not seen, and the higher ideals are not seen, and the consciousness is material under lower Saturn, which holds the consciousness to physical objectives and will not allow higher objectives to take their place until the law, Saturn, is fulfilled with respect to physical objectives. This goes on a long time in the hall of ignorance. We are captives of the senses, and we see and entertain in our consciousness that which the senses present. We are skeptical of higher possibilities. Our consciousness is focused in the lower worlds. Soul is consciousness, and consciousness is earthbound. But one day, we move on after long experience with earthiness and materiality. Even now, Capricorn people can be recognized often by their materiality, maybe even spiritual materiality. It's possible. But we become, through our focused mind and our many achievements, because this is a sign of continuous achievement, the one who crosses the water on our way to what? The type of light of Aquarius shines across the sea, but the individual advanced man is not deflected by emotional glamours. The glamours begin to dry up, at least the emotional glamours. The moon is in detriment here in Capricorn, and so the Capricorn can maintain a certain dryness and detachment from watery magnetisms that we normally call glamour. It is the goat with the tail of the fish and adaptable. Hence, I suppose, the fluidity in the sense of intelligent adaptation of the advanced Capricorn individual. First ray, seventh ray, third ray. This, I think, is emphasizing the third ray and its detachment from, from attachment. We're told it's easier for third ray and fifth ray types to achieve the second initiation because they are normally not so emotional. And if Capricorn is helping in this process, the waters dry out more easily. Of course, the love energy has to return. It's a first, third, and fifth, seventh ray, and so there's not so much love initially in the Capricornian approach, except when Venus is hierarchically potent. And of course, none of us is a pure type. We're all of us influenced by our rays, whatever they may be, and by other zodiacal signs. So we're not going to have all the advantages or all the liabilities of one particular sign. This is Saturn again, contributing to the control of the emotions. The waters provide no obstacle. One can cross the water. One even wonders about the parting of the Red Sea. Moses, I think, had both a Capricornian and an Aries aspect to his nature. The parting of the sea so that one could cross through the dryness is, in a way, crossing the water. One can cross on the surface, or one can walk through with the waters on either side. And it's only the willpower and the control of Saturn that will allow one to do this. Finally, we come to a place where the first ray of Capricorn is very strongly accented, and he becomes expressing the third aspect of the first ray will, the conqueror of death. The will that creates, that's Aries, the will that fulfills, the will to fulfillment, that's Leo, the will that conquers death, that's Capricorn. So there's a correlation here. Is Venus strong enough to conquer death? Well, I suppose soul identification and realizing oneself as the incarnating unit conquers death, and it's the death of consciousness, isn't it, often? It can be survival, conquered by the type of resurrection which the initiate Jesus demonstrated, perhaps with the help of the Christ here, we don't know. But there is the conquering of the death of consciousness, which is subdued by matter, and Venus, with its illumination and its love, makes matter transparent, brings it to a great state of refinement, and consciousness is no longer limited, but can be fully that of the soul, which is an immortal being, and in that sense, realizing oneself as an immortal being is the conquest of death. One becomes initiated. Certainly Venus is a great initiator. The line of initiatory bestowal comes from Sirius through the Sun, through Venus to the Earth. So our whole initiatory system is Sirian in its nature, but from a planetary perspective, it's Venusian in its nature. The Sun is the initiator, the solar logos of the Earth, but Venus is also a kind of initiator. Venus, the logos of Sirius initiates our solar logos, and the logos of Venus is involved in the initiatory process of our Earth. So there is the vital way of conquering death, which requires the first ray, and there is the way of conquering the death of consciousness in which Venus, the hierarchical ruler, can participate. It's interesting that divine love and sublime light can all be achieved in Capricorn as well as the unconquerable will. But at first it's a very tough slog, and one has to disidentify through abstraction and detachment with all that previously engrossed its interest, and there the dual rulership of Saturn will help. The keynote suggests to us Capricorn consummates the work of Scorpio. Well, Scorpio is traditionally associated most with the second initiation, and Capricorn with the third, consummate, on the summit, consummation. The first great consummation is the third initiation, which for all practical purposes makes a man a full member of the kingdom of God under Capricorn. So there is a great deal of testing going on in Scorpio, and Scorpio does contribute at the third initiation. However, Capricorn is even more important there. So there is the triumphant disciple in Scorpio, but the truly triumphant initiate is created in Capricorn. So the work begun there through humility, because in Scorpio Hercules kneels, is achieved in Capricorn, where the kneeling is confirmed and a great humility, much needed by the Capricorn type, is achieved. Capricorn, after all, rules the knees. So these are two signs where entrance into the hierarchy is made possible. And Mars and Saturn are their rulers, and those are two planets which have many negative associations, but also provide the man with the grit and discipline and force that is needed to enter into the hierarchy. So this is the story of initiation. beginning at the lower point of the inverted diamond, the inverted triangle, captured by all that is of the earth, unable to see any of the heights, but finally coming free of detachment as an advanced individual. And through the adaptable fluid detachment, able to climb that mountain, one mountain after another, until in the great light of the Sun, Venus, and Saturn combined, one becomes the conqueror of both forms of death. Vital death, in other words, eventually there will be no need to reincarnate. No need to invest one's vitality in the lower forms in the usual way. And there will be no need to be deluded by attraction to these lower worlds. One conquers the tendency to submerge the consciousness in lower form. And one stands etherealized. One stands at a very high state of vibratory frequency, quite the opposite of the earthbound soul, who is the clod, you know, we might call it the clod of matter, the dense matter accumulated and impenetrable, hard substance impenetrable by the subtler forces. One is then able to penetrate all density with higher consciousness and with the higher will. One need no longer descend. One is a unicorn, white and one-pointed, the creature of the heights, the true initiate. Well, okay, we've taken this, I think, this little section as far as we should. Another hour and 2 minutes has elapsed. I guess I can't get it right on the button. And we're going to, in our next tape, or program, we will discuss the last two of these threefold divisions concerned with the way of responding to the zodiacal energies. Now, bring this down. And that has been the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 98C on page 333, but we're still on page 333. So we're going to begin D shortly. And bring this whole section to a kind of consummation. These relationships are most important. These apparently secondary relationships show some very important relationships in the developing consciousness and abilities of the disciple.